Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Amy. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Interesting show today.
Interesting show.
Every once in a while, like once a quarter, we like to mix it up. We like to provide our listeners with something a little bit out of the norm, usually a medical show. And our listeners are in for a treat today because a lot of knowledge in this room, a lot of knowledge to be shared about, you know, something that in my mind, are you familiar with PCOS, Lee?
I wasn't before getting the notes.
Yeah,
this is news to me. So I'm going to be the one asking all those questions from the perspective of the person who knows nothing about this.
There we go. Well, any of our listeners that have been affected by infertility problems, any women that PCOS is on their mind, listen up. Tell your friends to listen up as well. Pass this on to them. This morning with us today, we have Dr. Perlow, who is the medical director of Georgia Reproductive Specialists. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you, Amy.
One other thing I need to mention too, Lee, all three of these guests are authors of books, like books, plural,
wow,
and lots of articles, lots of knowledge here. Also with us this morning, we have Christine DeZern, who's the founder of the Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome Association, founded in 1997. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And last but definitely not least, we have Avelina Sterling, and she is a public health educator and researcher specializing in reproductive and women's health issues. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I love the titles of some of these books, too, which we'll get into. So, Lee, sometimes folks go, you know, directly from the Atlanta Business Radio Show on to bigger and better things, but Christine has actually been on NBC's Dateline. And I know Dr. Perlow was telling me earlier that he spoke in China on this subject as well. So a lot of knowledge. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, y'all. But let's start at the basics. PCOS, what does it stand for? What does it mean?
Well, PCOS stands for Polycystic Ovary Syndrome. In some cases, it's referred to as Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome. Same thing. And it's an endocrine condition that affects women's hormones. It's thought to start with the hormone insulin, which some people might be familiar with because it's known that insulin is one of the hormones that must be taken by people who have diabetes. But it's poorly understood, and it's even a mystery to many women that have it. It's not as frequently diagnosed as we'd like to see because the symptoms of polycystic ovary syndrome are so diverse that they're not always recognized as being part of the same condition.
What are they mistaken for?
Well, I think that one of the problems with making a diagnosis and understanding this is that historically we've been led to believe that the ovary is the culprit in this condition. And we just look for what's going on in the hormone interactions between the ovary and the pituitary gland. We now understand that insulin resistance may be an underlying factor. So it opens up a number of other conditions that may be related. And so we have a whole new paradigm to address this, and this is very new information.
So PCOS, does it affect younger women, older women? Is it environmental? I have a lot of questions. Just, you know, PCOS, is it usually diagnosed when someone's a teenager and starts menstruation, or is it later in life when they decide they want to have babies and can't? When is it usually diagnosed?
Well, I think we all wish it would be diagnosed as early as possible. Most women start having symptoms early on, soon after menstruation. But because of the nature of PCOS, and as Christine was saying, it's a very diverse collection of symptoms, a lot of times women go many years and many doctors before they actually get an accurate diagnosis. PCOS isn't something that you just take one test and you either have it or you don't. There's a collection of tests that you can have and a collection of symptoms, and that's usually how the diagnosis. I would say that most of us would agree most women go much longer before a diagnosis is given than we would want them to.
How much longer? Like years?
Years mm-hmm. longer. In fact, there were 11 doctors that missed the diagnosis throughout my childhood, adolescence, and into early adulthood. So it's very frequent for it to span on for years and years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. One of the other concerns about that is that when the diagnosis is made, quite often the medical professional will not look at the wider implications of having this condition, so they won't look to determine whether it has something to do with acne or high blood pressure or cholesterol abnormalities or heart disease risk and actually family risk. So when we identify one person who has this condition, it's time to look at other family members to see if they may have some of the stigmata of the condition. They may not make or meet the criteria to make a diagnosis, but they may still have cholesterol problems or high blood pressure. That's all due to the same underlying genetic abnormalities.
It's interesting. With most conditions, they're easy to diagnose. But you said something about, you know, the diagnosis being, you know, not readily available. Oftentimes someone can characterize physical things like hair growth and physical characteristics of someone with PCOS. But as far as the diagnosis, are you saying it can often be missed or misdiagnosed?
Well, it's certainly the diagnosis is frequently missed or it is under-recognized. But I'm not really sure it's important to make the diagnosis if you're open to the panoply of syndromes that are involved. One of the problems that we had for many years, Europeans would diagnose the condition with different criteria than Americans would. So you had to know whether a research paper you were reading was published out of Europe or in this country. And finally, there's some agreement on the diagnosis of PCOS. But I think a more appropriate medical condition would be one called metabolic syndrome. And this is an early sign of that condition. And it really opens up consideration for a number of systems. So you're not just focusing on what's going on in the ovary, but taking a more holistic approach to, you know, what is this person's health? What are their health risks in the future?
When you talk about metabolic syndrome, do you look at a person's lifestyle? Is that something that's affected by, you know, the unhealthy lifestyle, the way they eat, their habits? I mean, maybe go into metabolic syndrome a little bit more.
Well, certainly metabolic syndrome has drawn a lot of attention in the United States over the last few years, and that's been correlated to diet, sedentary lifestyle, you know, lifestyle types of corollaries that cause or are thought to lead to metabolic syndrome. So an example would be the high carbohydrate and high refined carbohydrate diet that we've all grown up on, and we've all grown up. My generation was the first generation really to grow up on trans fats and other types of dietary intake that we know leads to diabetes and can certainly impact a woman's health through PCOS through those channels. Absolutely.
So would healthier lifestyles be one of the treatments suggested?
Well, very important. I think everybody needs to cut out the high fructose corn syrup, cut down on trans fats, the whites, the potatoes, the white rice. And, you know, I found recently that I can't go into a single restaurant in Atlanta and find correct portion sizes. My wife and I finally have come to the resolution that we need to split the items on the menu, and we get one entree and maybe one appetizer and share that with the two of us. Some restaurants are willing to do that, some are not.
Right.
But it's important to stay healthy and consider what you eat.
So other than healthy lifestyle, tell us about some of the treatments for PCOS. I know there's probably some controversy. Some of them are not necessarily traditional.
Right. Well, I think that treating PCOS metabolic syndrome is a three-legged stool. To go out and treat the blood pressure or the cholesterol or the fertility or the acne is really not the first-line approach. I think in a three-legged stool, you have three legs on it and three things that have to be done. And if you skip one of those legs, treatment is not generally going to be effective. So those legs are diet, their exercise, aerobic exercise, 20 to 30 minutes, 3 to 4 times a week, can be very effective at improving insulin function. And then for those who are overweight, oftentimes metformin is utilized. And the exciting thing about that is the generic drug works. Recent studies have shown that the extended release drug does not. And I think one of the controversies about the drug use is that this drug is generic. It's cheap. You can get a 10-month supply for $10. So there are not a lot of drug companies promoting this kind of therapy to physicians.
Now, what happens if you don't treat it? What if it, like yours went 11 years, what happens, you know, if it goes 15, 20 years? What are the ramifications?
Well, certainly the symptoms can get worse and mm-hmm. can lead to, it's you're on the path to develop diabetes in many, many cases here. So the lack of treatment of PCOS certainly leads to long-term health issues, and that's a problem. There are also other issues that can arise, such as endometrial cancer and other kinds of spin-offs, I should say, from PCOS.
Yeah, and cardiovascular disease as well. In addition to the diabetes connection, women with PCOS are also at high risk for having high cholesterol and high blood pressure, which contribute to cardiovascular disease.
There was a recent abstract that came out, I just came across it this week, that looked at mental function in rats that were fed high fructose corn syrup, and they found that their memory and their learning was delayed in this situation as they became increasingly insulin resistant. So there's a whole sense of well-being. We also know that sleep apnea is often an accompanying finding with women with PCOS, and if you're not sleeping, your stress hormones go up, and those stress hormones go up, make the insulin resistant worse. You're tired when you wake up in the morning. You're fatigued. You're moody. You don't learn well. So there are a number of different considerations, rather, you know, intermediate considerations about well-being that can be impacted by having this condition.
If a woman doesn't address this, would this contribute to them being infertile?
It certainly can do that, but I would guess that between 60 to 70% of all health-related issues may be indirectly tied to this.
But going back to the fertility, does PCOS lead to infertility?
Well, yes. The majority of women with polycystic ovary syndrome will have infertility. They have irregular or prolonged menstrual cycles. And the nice thing is you don't have to go through fertility treatment to correct it. But there are about 18 to 20% who have polycystic ovaries and may have some of the abnormalities with cholesterol or high blood pressure or elevated male hormones that do still have regular cycles. But their infertility may still be a problem despite having regular menstrual cycles.
But going back to your original question about missing the diagnosis, women with PCOS do ovulate sometimes, and some women with PCOS have children without realizing that there ever was any issue with their ovulatory function. And a doctor might miss the diagnosis of PCOS because they think, oh, this woman has a child. She couldn't possibly have PCOS.
So they rule that out immediately.
They rule
based
it out.
On that.
And that is not true at all. That's not the case. They very well may have PCOS.
How can the patient help their doctor help them?
I mean, what kind of things, if I'm going as a patient and I'm going to speak to my doctor, what are some of the things that I should be communicating that are happening with my body or with my cycle? Or I mean, how do you communicate
That's such an excellent question, because one of the primary reasons that the diagnosis is missed in many cases is because women don't share everything with their doctor.
Right.
It's very embarrassing. In a psychosocial sense, women with PCOS find that their femininity is attacked from all sides. They are growing facial hair, which is obviously something that's unattractive by our society's standards. In many cases, they're gaining weight. They may not even understand why, but they're certainly not adhering to the silhouette that we like to see in our magazines, et cetera. They will hide these things from their doctor frequently, thinking that these are simply cosmetic issues, that they're not medically related, especially the hirsutism or facial and body hair. They may have even had laser hair removal and those types of treatments from a cosmetologist, whereby they're not actually showing those symptoms.
Right, so a doctor would never even know.
The doctor would never know. So women need to understand that these are not just cosmetic issues. These are medical issues. Right. They require treatment.
There's health ramifications.
Absolutely.
But I think another important issue is that getting to the physician doesn't always imply that they'll get the right information. There are patients that I've seen who've been told by their physicians, you just need to eat less, you're eating too much, or they may have a parent who implies that they're weak-willed because they have this condition. And we know that's not the case, that when a calorie comes in, it can either be burned as energy or stored. And if the person is gaining weight, they likely don't have those calories for nutritional status. And despite gaining weight, despite cutting calories, they may be very undernourished.
So we need to get rid of that stigmatism that it's an attack on femininity and that it's self-induced. I mean, you can't, if you're taking those calories in, it's not always something that people can help the way their body is processing it. Interesting. And you go back to the fact that even if somebody's had babies, it's not something that is always pre-baby. I did not know that. I find that really interesting because I think a lot of women probably do suffer from things that might be misdiagnosed, thinking it's menopause or, you know, just things that go along with getting older as a woman.
Well, certainly as insulin resistance progresses, the incidence of PCOS and developing perhaps at a later point in time will also increase.
So, Evelina, I'd like to know, you've written some interesting books, Living with PCOS, one of them, Having Your Baby Through Egg Donation, lots of different types of books. In your research and in all of your studies on PCOS, have you seen anything change over maybe the last 10 or 15 years?
I would say definitely more attention to PCOS. When I wrote the book Living with PCOS, which was almost 10 years ago now, there was very little information. It was just before the internet was getting popular, and Christine's organization really, I think, was one of the forerunners of PCOS education and support. So I definitely think that there's a lot more information available for women, both in education and support. And I think physicians are getting more knowledgeable about this issue as well.
What do you think is the best way to bring more attention to it, to the woman?
To continue talking about it and to really say that this really affects a large percentage of women. And women need to be proactive and understand their symptoms. And as we were saying, not be embarrassed about the symptoms, but be open and honest and really, trust their intuition. I mean, a lot of women that I've spoken with for many years thought that there was something wrong. As Dr. Perlow was saying, they were having weight issues, even though that they knew that they were doing everything that they could. They were eating well, they were exercising, and the weight just wasn't coming off. Or their menstrual cycles were irregular, and it would always be chalked up to stress.
Can you define irregular just for our listener? Because irregular can mean lots of different things to different people.
Yeah. Dr. Perlow,
Well, anything from 25 to 35 days would generally be considered normal. Mm-hmm. And some women with polycystic ovary syndrome are going to have more frequent bleeding or continuous or prolonged bleeding. But for many of them, they either will stop having menstrual periods or skip a month or two and find that the duration between the menstrual cycles increases.
Now, if someone's on birth control, wouldn't that be masked?
Well, that's one of the problems, is that quite often patients will go into a physician and say, I think I have PCOS because my periods are irregular, and the doctor will place them on a birth control pill, which will take care of that symptom but really doesn't address the underlying condition, and it happens too often. The woman may come in complaining of irregular cycles when she's in her 40s and 50s and completed her family. And the doctor suggests, well, maybe a hysterectomy or endometrial ablation is the way to handle your problem. And too often the hysterectomy is done, but it doesn't correct the underlying condition. So the person is still at risk for diabetes and cardiovascular complications and the like.
But there's medication for this too, correct? I mean, we talk about not putting a Band-Aid on the problem and living a healthier lifestyle. There is there are other resources out there, correct?
Well, again, it's a three-legged stool that involves medication, changing diet habits, watching the amounts of foods that you eat, and exercise. If you skip one of those three items, you're just not going to have the same kind of success.
And I think it's important to recognize that there's not a cure for PCOS. It is a condition that has to be managed. And that means that you need to pay attention. Not just that medication, the three-legged stool that Dr. Perla describes is a great analogy. We've seen the results of studies that have shown that the medication alone really is not nearly as effective as combining the lifestyle with the medication. It's 2 + 2 = 5.
Yeah. Now, how many women are affected by this?
At least 6% of all women would meet the criteria, 6 to 8% in various studies. But if you look at things like family history, gestational diabetes during a prior pregnancy, weight problems, family history of diabetes, criteria that may indicate a risk for metabolic syndrome or diabetes in the future, that can be as many as 10 to 20%. I mean, we've seen a dramatic rise in type 2 diabetes, and I think along with that, we're seeing a dramatic rise in insulin resistance and PCOS. So the numbers we have from studies that were completed in the past may not represent the true incidence of the problem today.
There are also differences based on ethnicity in the prevalence of PCOS. And we know that women of Native North and South American descent have a much higher prevalence of PCOS.
And again, do we relate that to lifestyle?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, these are women who are incorporated into the same Atlanta that we all know. So a Native Mexican, Native American, Native Alaskan, Native South American populations have emigrated and are on the move. But the prevalence, the higher prevalence of PCOS and of diabetes and the other complications we've talked about travel with them.
Yeah. One of the interesting asides on that is the South Asian Indian population. PCOS is seen in an increased prevalence in that group. In India, lifestyle, activity, exercise in the daily activities is so much greater that it tends to be less of a problem. But when South Asian Indians come to this country and adapt our lifestyle and maintain their diets, PCOS becomes a particularly virulent problem. And if you look at heart disease later in life in South Asian Indians, it's far more severe than it is for Caucasians from this country.
Shifting gears a little bit, Christine, just your passion for your foundation and your educating of others is very admirable. And I'm sure a lot of women find you to be a success story in that even with PCOS, you have a child.
I do.
Walk us through that. I mean, was that stressful? Is that something that did you have? I mean, if you don't want to talk about it, that's okay too. But is that something that people look at you in your education and say, wow, this is a success story. I realize that I can overcome this, live a healthy lifestyle and have a child.
Well, first of all, I want to shout it from the rooftops.
Okay, good, good.
I do have an infant son. And by the way, I'm 44 years old. Having my first child at the age of 44 was quite an interesting experience. But yes, I was successful in achieving a pregnancy, although it came later in life. And anecdotally, I'm finding that is a common experience within the population of women with PCOS that I know. As we age, our hormones start to calm down a little bit. And if we're able to perhaps maintain a healthy lifestyle and really manage PCOS, we can perhaps reestablish the cyclicity that we need within our menstrual cycles to achieve a pregnancy at that point in time. Now, that's also important for women with PCOS who think that they can't get pregnant and later in life are just assuming that that's not going to happen to not be surprised or to take preventative measures or if it's not a part of their life plan at that point in time. But I'm thrilled to be a mom today. And I guess it just goes to show that Never say never. if it is a life goal to achieve parenthood, it can happen. It certainly can happen to anyone who sets out to do so.
Exciting. We're running out of time a little bit, but I would love to go around and have all three of you maybe give us your websites, how folks can reach out to you and find out more, and if you want to shed some more light on your organizations you're involved with. And before we do that, I would love to know, how did the three of you meet? Because Dr. Perlow, when we had this conversation, you very quickly came up with a handful of experts, and is it a passion for this subject, or?
Well, when I first got interested in working with women with PCOS, I found out about the PCO support group and their wonderful website, and spoke at many of their convention annual meetings, and for a while served as an officer on the board of that organization. So over the years, Christine and I have worked together, and Evelina and I have been working more closely on a research project related to PCOS right now, but we've followed each other's activities through the benefit of the internet, which really is a good way to know people who have something to say and are interested in teaching and sharing their information.
Yeah. Do you blog on this subject?
Yes, I do.
You're all over the internet.
Yeah.
People can find you.
You know, my wife either Twitters me or sends email or instant message when she wants to reach me. And that's when we're in the same room.
That's pretty scary. That's very scary. So, Christine, tell us about what you're involved in, how people can reach you if they want to learn more.
Okay, great. Well, let me just give a little bit of background. PCO, first of all, the website is www.pcosupport. There's okay. only one S in there, PCOSUPPORT.org. And the organization's been around for about 11 years now. Back in the beginning, we were the only game in town. Today, you can find many, many websites, and we're so thrilled that there's so much great information out there. We've changed our focus recently to really, really focus on providing medically credible information. Out there on the internet, there is information, there's misinformation that can be found in some cases, so we're really focused on delivering the right credible information, things that results of studies that have been well-designed, have adhered to scientific method, et cetera. At the same time, we're providing lay resources, and our goal is to make sure that women that have a high school education or above are well-equipped, and those who are perhaps below that level will also have resources to turn to help them achieve an understanding so they can manage their condition.
Terrific. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Thanks so much.
Our listeners will reach out. Your website is incredible, too, by the way. I checked it out. And a lot of great information. And for listeners, too, that are just questioning, gosh, could this be me? I mean, some of these things ring a bell or resonate with me. Great way to start is by checking out your website.
Absolutely. There's a list there of symptoms. And we also have, you can write in for this right now. We also have a survey that you can take that will help you to determine if further information may be needed, further diagnosis may be needed.
Terrific. Thanks for being with us today. Dr. Perlow.
Well, our website is www.ivf.com, and as you said, I'm all over the internet. I first started the site writing it on Notepad when I saw that the internet would become a tool to help provide information for patients. It's grown to become, I think, one of the largest infertility websites out there, but it also serves as an introduction to the practice that I have here in Atlanta that does IVF and polycystic ovaries.
Excellent. Any final thoughts from you?
Well, we are looking forward to addressing PCOS and finding out ways to provide a more holistic treatment approach or therapeutic approach that considers wellness, the diet, the exercise, medication options, and putting together panels of experts to come up with a consensus. And our first step in this is going to be introducing a survey, and we'll get those links out on all of our websites to do that in the very near future.
Excellent. Thanks so much for being with us today. And Evelina. Give us your websites, also your books. I mean, let folks know how they can reach out to you and find out more.
Yeah, my website is www.myfertilityplan.com. And I am a professional public health educator. So what I like to do is take the very medically oriented information and make it very user-friendly to patients. And I'm all about action-oriented information, not just providing people with definitions and descriptions, but really giving them the tools that they need to take that information, put it into action to improve their health. So I've written several books, which you can find on my website, all dealing with reproductive health and fertility issues. So yeah.
Excellent. Lee, great show.
Yeah, fascinating. It'll be good for our listeners.
It will be good for our listeners. And especially a lot of women, I think, sometimes are embarrassed to think about these things and are embarrassed to talk to their doctor. And so often a Band-Aid is put on the problem. And, you know, we got to take charge of our own health. We say that all the time, right?
Right. Education. That's the key.
Education is the key. Thanks so much for being with us this week. I'm Amy Otto for the Atlanta Business Radio Show.